No, if I was him, I wouldn't wait for it. Okay, we're in the Gemara Makos Daf Chof Gimel Amud Aleph. Rav Sheish. Oh, boy, here we go again.
It's not on the screen,
anyway. Oh, I'm not on the screen anyway, so.
The leopard on the left.
Okay, let's. Okay, we're on the screen now.
Yep.
And we just gotta wait for the. Okay, we're back in business now. Okay, so we had two statements of of Rav Sheshes in the name of Rav Elazar ben Azariah, talking about reason why the strap is made from a calf's hide, and also regarding the Yavama, that she doesn't fall to a brother-in-law who has terrible skin disease. So you get a third statement that's totally unrelated, as follows. And it's one that people don't like to hear. V'amar Rav Sheshes Mishum Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Sheshes said the name of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Kalamavazos es hamoadim. Anyone who degrades the festivals is ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. It's like he's worshiping idols. What does it mean that he degrades the festivals? The festivals refer her here to Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the festival, rather than to Yom Tov itself. Okay, because it's called the Moadim. The Gemara speaks of one who degrades Chol HaMoed by working on these days as if they were regular weekdays.
Whoa.
So that's what we're saying over here. So the point being, although, again, I'll just repeat, although if a person has no food to eat and would be hungry because he doesn't have any money, then there's a leniency to work so that he makes money that day so he can come home and have something to eat for at night. But if that leniency does, or you'll have a massive financial loss, which would be such as you'd lose your job. Other than that, one is not allowed to take off Chol HaMoed. And if you work on Chol HaMoed, one should not work on Chol HaMoed. And if you do, then you're degrading the festival. Okay? And that's like a person worshiping idols. How does he get to that? For it says in Sefer Shemos, Elohei Masecha lo sasalach. Do not make for yourself molten gods. And the Samachlan, right next to there, it talks about Eschaga Matzos Tishmor. Be careful to observe the festival of the Matzos, which obviously, and that Pasuk, the Gemara Chagiga learns that that's the source for not working on Chol HaMoed. So they put the two together in that area. All right, another teaching from Rav Sheshes, name of Rav Elazar. Might as well get all his teachings in over here. From Rav Sheshes, Mishum Rav Elazar ben Azariah, call him a saper Lashon Hara. Anyone who speaks Lashon Hara. V'chalamekabel Lashon Hara. Anyone who receives and listens and accepts the Lashon Hara, which is also biblically not allowed, even just listening, even though it's uncomfortable to the whole person to be quiet, I don't want to hear it. You are obliged to not listen to Lashon Hara, even if it's an uncomfortable situation.
You get lashes.
You don't get lashes, it's going to be worse. Halavai, you get away with lashes for listening to Lashon Hara. That would be a good day for you. I'm just saying. Halavai, you could get lashes for it, and you could be atoned for it so easily. Okay, that's number two. Anyone who bears false testimony, these are all things you don't get lashed for. Roy Lashlicha L'Klavim. It's worthy that he should be thrown to the dogs. Okay? I mean, after he dies, because he's no better than an animal. The Chavetz Chaim explains that one who indulges in Lashon Hara possesses the same characteristics as a dog. Sometimes a dog will bark at a person going innocently on his way and thereby frighten him. And sometimes a dog will call injury, causing him by biting him. Similarly, the speaker of Lashon Hara will malign a person going on his innocent way of life, which may frighten him or do more serious damage. Thus, fitting that the maligner be thrown to the dogs will be frightened and bite him. Morale explains similarly that a speaker of Lashon Hara is worse than a dog because dogs have been known to exercise discretion against whom they will go on to the attack. However, a speaker of Lashon Hara fails to show such discretion. Okay. As well, Kabbalistically, we're told that a person speaks Lashon Hara when he leaves this world. He does not get the benefit of going directly to Gehenna to purify himself, but rather he has to go through a Gilgul. He's brought back another time into this world as a dog.
Oh.
Because now you can bark to your heart's content. Okay? But the soul is in the dog.
Yeah.
And the soul is suffering knowing that it's been a dog. Okay, so how do we know that the person is worthy to be thrown to the dogs? It says, Tichsiv, when it talks about Nevelis, Lakelev Tishlach Unoso. When you slaughtered an animal, you found that it wasn't a good slaughtering. You have to give it to the dogs. The stomach land, what's the next parsha there? Losisa Shema Shavi shall not accept a false report of Lashon Hara. So, and also, even though it says lo si saw, you shall not accept a false report, but Kloribe is also read, nami lo sasi, which means you shall not cause it to be reported. So therefore, it's a double meaning, not to accept it and not to cause others to report it.
Why do they use the word false? Because I thought it's irrelevant whether it's true or false.
Yeah, but the truth is, it is always false.
Yeah.
Even if it's true, it's false.
It's not the real truth.
You understand. Let's say the guy really was guilty of a particular thing, but no one needs to know about it. No one needs to know about it. And you report it. What are you creating? The image, this guy, 99% is a good guy. He makes one thing wrong. Now, that's what you have to tell everybody. You're one of the media people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And therefore, what do you do? Well, it's the truth. It's not the truth. It's a false characterization of the entire person.
That's right.
And that's what it's all about. So therefore, as true as it is, it's false.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's out of our little Agadita for today. And now we go back to our regular scheduled programming in the Mishnah that says Ushtei Ritzos, and there's two straps that run up and down that we said come from the donkey. Besides the big strap that's doubled and fourfold over, there's holes within that strap where you could put in the donkey straps as well. Why donkey straps? Tana, we learn in a braisa, Shel Chamor, they're made of donkey hide. Why? Kidadori Shahu Galilo Oled Rav Chista, as a certain person from the Galilee taught in the presence of Rav Chista. The Navi says like this as he chastises the Jewish people that were not as good as an animal. And the famous words of the prophet of Isaiah, Yada Shor Koneu Vechamor Eveu Spell of Yisrael, O Yada. That what the ox knows its owner, and the donkey knows the trough of its master. He knows the hand that feeds it. But the Jewish people, you don't know me. You're not thinking of me. So therefore, and what do you mean you don't know me? You went and did Navera, blatant Navera. When you know it was against the Torah to do this. Don't you know, aren't you as good as the donkey? So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Yavo Mishamakir Evus Balav, let the one who recognizes his master's trough, and that's the donkey, Viafarim Mishena Makir Evus Balav, and let the punishment come through that to the person who does not recognize his master's trough. So the hide of the donkey who recognizes his master, that will be that which will he'll do the lashes to the sinner does not recognize. It's all part of the lessons there. Okay, next part of the mission, a bunch of little pieces over here. We said that the whip's handle has to be a tefach long and a tefach wide, and also the strap should be long enough that the tip reaches the beginning of the stomach. So now, what do we see from that? Last statement, Amar Abaye Shmamina, we learn from this, Kol Chad V'Chad Lefum Gabei Avdin Aleh. For each and every person who's supposed to get lashes, we have a whip specially designed to meet that amount according to the width of his back, because it has to reach the belly in the front. So there are broader people and not such broad people.
Not one fits all.
So not one fits all. To which the Gemara asks, if that's the case, Amar le Rava, Rava says, Im Kain, if so, Nafish lehe Ritzuas Tuva. We're going to have a bunch of different sized whips. Oh, that's the answer. El Amar Rava, Rava answers, Afka saw Isle, it had an Afka, so an adjustable knot. So we could customize it. We get custom service here. Ki boy, when a person wants to, Miktarbe, he would tighten it. Ki boy, when he wanted, Marpebe, he loosens it. So we could only have one strap. One strap fits all.
So it was one.
Yeah, but it was adjustable. It was adjustable. So they would do it. Next part of the Mishnah, Malkimbo, the Bezdin gives him a third of the lashes in the front and two-thirds in the back, and we had a machlokas exactly what that was, but that's not material relevant. How do we know that we divided up that way? Amar Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Vihi pilu hashoifet, and the judge casts him down, Vihi kol lefonov, and he lashes him lefonov on his front, Kidei Risha, so according to his wickedness, bim mispor, in an assigned number. So what do you see from the way it's worded? It said vihi kol lefanav. He's lashed in front, and then it says Risha so kamispor. So he explains, Risha achas mofav, one part of the wickedness is done in front, shtei rishos meyachrov, and two parts of the wickedness are on the back. In other words, in the simple meaning of the pasuk, the word lefanav means in front of the judge, meaning in front of the judge's presence. Mm-hmm. However, the Gemara explains the word to also mean on the front part of the body. The verse states that this lashing is kidei risha, so commensurate with his guilt, in the singular, implying a single unit of punishment, but adds the unnecessary word bimispar in the assigned number, which implies multiple punishments. And the lowest multiple is two. So there you see, one measure of wickedness is in the front, and two measure of witnesses is in of lashes is in the back. Okay.
So what's a single lash then? Is that going to hit the back and the front?
No, no, it's three. It's one that hits the front, and two hit the back.
So that's considered one.
No, one hits the front,
13,
2 hits the back, 1/3 hit the front, 2/3 hit the back, and then it's always divisible by 3. Divisible by 3. Okay, next point, Ein Malkin Oso, when we strike him, not standing nor sitting, bent over, as it says, the judge casts him down a little bit. Okay, so now, and it goes on and on in the Mishnah. So the Gemara wants to know the following thing. Amar Rav Chisam Rabbi Yochanan Minayin L'Ritzua. How do we know that the strap, Shu Muchbelas, we said it's doubled over. We said that each of the two calfskin straps was doubled along its length, so they became four straps. Okay, what's the source for doubling the straps? Shenemar, it says, Vihi Pilo, and the judge shall cast him down. That's what he wants to say. And do not read it as vihi pilu, but rather as vihich pilu. Okay, sometimes that hey sounds a little bit like a chuff. So hich pilu means you double it over. Now this is a big grammar type of thing. The elucidation is based on the verse of our text in the Sefer Digdugei Sofer, Yerushalmi, as cited verbatim, blah, blah, blah. Okay, this line is not in the Yerushalmi. Indeed, we have no Yerushalmi at all in the third chapter of Makkos. Rabbeinu Tam did not have the extra line, explained it more differently. Okay, anyway, so that's how they read it. Vehichbilu. You read hipilu as vehichbilu. Kichbil kafel is to double. Wait a minute, we already have a drush on that. Vehmoimi belu de gufe, already learned that teaches you to bend the guy over. Vehipilu means you bend the guy over. How can you learn from hipilu, you double it over? He says, well, if it only wanted to say bend over, that was a more simple word that means bent over. Imkain lichtov kra, the pasuk should have said yatihu. Yatihu is a more pure word that means to bend him over. My hipilu. Hipilu usually means to make him fall down. That's not a word that sings so well for bending over. Hitilu is more to bend. Hipilu is to fall. So why using the word fall to mean bend? Ella what? Shmami not tart. You want to learn two things that we make him bend over and we double over the strap.
We already knew from Sinai. This is just proof of it, right?
Yeah.
So he's not tied. He's not necessarily tied. He just sort of stands.
He is tied, bending down.
Okay.
His hands are tied.
Okay.
And he's done in a way that he's bending down. Hamakaviyado. Now the one who lashes with one hand in all his might. So you figure you got the strongest guy in the world, you know, macho man, you know, bulging muscles and wham.
Hit him with one shot.
But
you're not exactly. Taner Rabbanan, our rabbi said, this is the type of figure, is the guy who lashes. Ein mavine chasonim, we don't appoint these attendants that do the work. Ela chasire koach, who lack physical strength. Ve'yaseri mada, but having superior intelligence.
Little guys.
Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu chasire mada ve'yaseri koach. We can even point guys lacking intelligence and possessing great strength. What's going on over here?
What?
The commentaries explain the machlokes like this. The rabbis are here to argue about a principle that is also at the root of other disputes between them. In regard to capital punishment, there's a biblical mandate to be lenient with the defendant under certain circumstances. There is an overriding principle to try to use leniency in capital cases. The pasuk says, "V'hitzilu ha'eda," the congregation will save him. And that means you try to find some favorable reason to judge him favorably. You're always trying to. Okay? Now, that's when it comes when the judges have to decide if he's guilty of a capital offense. The question is, do we try to also be lenient? Does this man apply to the prosecution of Malchus as well? The rabbis maintain that this mandate does apply to the case of Malchus, and therefore are lenient in our choice of who wields the whip. Imagine a big tzaddik who's an 80-pound weakling.
Yeah, right.
Whoa. Even if he's trying hard. Right? So he doesn't get whipped so bad. Rabbi Yehuda disputes that there is any mandate to be lenient regarding Malchus. There are holes that there's no preference in choosing the one to administer the lashes to be the strongest guy in the world. Okay, so Machlokes, the Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda. So let's see now. Amar Rava says, Kavasei the Rabbi Yehuda Mestavra, it's more logical to say it's like Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can even do the strong guy, Dichsiv, it says about the lashes. It says, Lo Yosef pen Yosef. He may not exceed the lashes, lest he strike him an additional blow beyond that. So why are we warning him not to do more, lest he will do more? We're talking about a smart guy or not a smart guy?
That's a big guy.
With if you say the guy's not so smart, that's what we got to warn him not to do it. Eliyamer, you said, but if they know he is a smart guy, why does there have to give such a warning? Therefore, it's saying it's even the not smart guy has to get that warning. But the rabbis take this as not a proof, because they say, what? Like you were thinking, Sammy. For Abba Rabbi, what to do with that? Hey, Mizars and Ella Mizars, we only warn those who are going to listen to warnings and be motivated. In other words, people, it's, you know what it's like? My wife always tells me, like from time to time, you know, there are people, the majority of our chul people are wonderful people. Sometimes they get a Yetzirah to take too much food at the Kiddush, and sometimes people who are patiently at the end, they don't get. So if you notice, from time to time, I'll say, you know, don't fill up the whole plate. You don't have to do a lot, you know. Why don't you, you know, wait, to, you know. And my wife doesn't like me to say that. And I say, why not? Let the people know they shouldn't do it. So she says, exactly, this is me and my wife is like the machlokas here in these two rabbis. Right? I say, you got to warn the stupid people to not do these things. The people who just always have to be the first, load up the plate. They don't care if there's 60 people behind them, won't have. So I got to tell them so they don't think about it. My wife says, the people who want to fress aren't going to hear a word you're saying.
That's right.
And the good people will feel guilty even the little bit they're taking, they're not even going to take a little bit.
Yeah,
so that machlokas is exactly this machlokas.
That's right.
No? So we're both right.
Listen to you.
We're both right. There's two opinions.
Okay.
Okay.
We all heard one opinion there, Rabbi.
Okay. It's interesting. In this case, we hold like the Tanakhama, by the way, that we take people who are not so strong, and we don't apply it, and they're the ones who take the warning. Okay. Anyway, Tana. We also learn in a Braisa, we said he uses one hand. Why one hand? Keshehu Magbia, when he raises up his hand, this is how he does it. Magbia Bishteira. First, he takes both hands to bring the whip up. Okay? Which was the standard practice in lashing, says the Rambam. But Ukisha Makaba, when it's time to come down and lash, Makabiyata, use one hand. Why? Kiheicha delay that it should come from him, meaning with the full strength. You can certainly try to lash this way, or try to lash this way. Yeah, this way has got a lot more power. So when you're bringing it up, you're bringing it up with, for sure. Imagine a pitcher throwing a baseball with two hands or one hand. Come on. You can really reach back in one hand. So that's where one is better than two. Yeah. Two heads may be better than one, but
two hands going up.
I guess maybe to make it in the right position.
To line up.
To line it up straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's one hand, you may be like off, you know? So now you got to, okay, you're positioning.
Right.
Okay, so now I'm in the right position, and then, and it comes out.
What's the leniency in this, Rabbi? It's like a golf.
There's no leniency in that.
There's no leniency whatsoever.
Well, it's the weak guy giving it.
What's it with two hands?
If the weak guy did it with two hands, you wouldn't even feel a thing.
With two hands, you can't get around to the stomach anyhow.
You can't get around to the front with two hands.
You ever see a pitcher wind up with two hands?
That's right.
A lot of times they wind up with two.
They always do it.
Right? They line up with the two hands, and then whack.
But a batter, both hands.
Because you're doing a different motion.
Because you're hitting something with a stick.
He needs two hands on the stick, but actually one hand needs the two hands.
On
the left hand, the other one just holding the bat.
Keeping it steady.
No.
Okay, you need the two to keep it steady in the right direction.
Yeah.
But it's one hand, it's righty versus lefty.
Yeah.
Hockey's one hand. Baseball is connected to boxing.
I guess chopping wood, it's going straight. I don't know, but you could hear it. You definitely could hear it. You can't lash.
You know what, maybe?
It's good with two.
But you can,
sidearm. Sidearm.
Right.
Go the other way.
You can bring your weight from the back.
The other way.
You can't go like this as far as you can go with one.
The power doesn't come from how far you go back.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of
but I guess
your entire body.
When you're chopping wood, you have to be very precise, though.
You know, when you lash the guy,
it doesn't have to be on the exact same spot. You got the whole shoulder blade. So you want more power as long as you hit the blade. When you're chopping wood, you have to hit the same spot every time. Yeah, you know, like me, if I would chop it, first time I hit the middle of the wood, second time the side of the wood, the next time the left side. By the time I break the whole piece of wood, both hands keeps the focus. Okay, anyway. Next, now we start reading those psukim, if you remember. Vakore, kore, the reader reads a bunch of psukim. Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis taught. Well, this is the procedure. Hagadol Shebadayinim, the most prominent of the judges, kore, he reads those psukim. Okay? That's number one. He's reading the pasuk. Hashen is second most prominent judge, Mona. Now he counts out the lash before it's administered. So the one rabbi says the pasuk, the first word of the pasuk. The next guy says, okay, here comes number one. Vashlishi, wait a minute. And the third guy in the corner, okay, says, hit him. So it's three people before the guy even lashes. All right? Right? And then he hits him.
It should be,
the guy reads the pasuk. The guy says one. The guy says
two.
Lash him. Hit. And then the guy lashes him. Then the guy says the next pasuk. Two. Lash him. Lash him.
There's a 49 verse pasuk.
No, no. We already learned there's three psukim. They have 13 verses each. So that's how it fits in. We said there were 13, three psukim of 13 words, so it comes out to 39. Okay, so that's why the Mishnah is kind of odd. You know, when we learned earlier, we'll see how do you make a mistake. You have to really have poor communication going on here. Remember, the Mishnah said if you hit him extra, and that's.
Oh, so the second guy says 13.
Obviously, fail-safe system.
Yeah, fail-safe system.
Okay, now. Bisman Shemaka Baruba, when many lashes are to be dealt, they have valued before how many they're going to give him. So they're going to give him a lot. Marich, the judge draws out his recitation and the lash, so that the verses and the lashes will be completed simultaneously. Okay? Bisman Shemaka Muetes, when the lashes are to be less. Then Mekatzer, he shortens the recitation. For example, they estimate he can only get 36, but you read the 39 psukim. Remember, you got to read all those psukim. So if it's a lot of lashes, meaning 39, then he could take it at a slow pace. If it's going to be less lashes, he reads it quicker. I don't really understand the point. It doesn't seem to make sense. Because either way, it should match as many lashes as he has.
Exactly.
It doesn't really make sense. But Gemara says, but wait a minute, but the Mishnah said if you finish too early, you repeat, remember? But now it's not in the Mishnah say, he returns to the beginning. The judge repeats the verse until the lashes have been dealt. This contradicts the Brisa, which requires a judge to time his recitation of verse so that he completes them simultaneously with the last of the lashing. So it seems we got a conflict over here. So the Gemara answers, mitzvah letzamsim. It's a mitzvah to be precise. You should do it in the slow and the precise way. But ve'ilo tzimtzim, but if the guy wasn't precise, then he goes back. In other words, you know, you should be coordinated here. But sometimes in life, you have people who are not so coordinated. Whatever, for whatever reason, they're so focused on reading their psukim, they're not focusing on the exact procedure. So then, okay, he just keeps. But really, it should be done in the slower fashion. Okay, now, Tana Rabbanan, one other issue. Okay, the Torah says, when you lash him, it says, 40 shall he strike him, he shall not add, lest he continue to strike him. That was the pasuk we had. So, it says, Maka Rabba, a great beating, okay, beyond these, right, is beyond that prescribed number. Okay, now, where is this? I'm just trying to find the pasuk over here. Is it in here? I don't know where. Yeah, it says again, Arboim Yakenu, you hit him 40, Lo Yosef, don't add. Pen Yosef, so lest you will add al ela on these a makaraba, a big blow. I mean that makaraba. The English is an additional blow beyond these. Your brother will be the gray in your eyes. So here's the thing: it says hit, give him 40, not more, lest you do more on these, and you give him more makaraba. So what's this makaraba? I'm saying pen Yosef lahakoso al ela. What's this makaraba? This big blow. So that's the word that the Mishnah is looking at. The Gemara is a makaraba. So I might think, Ein Liela, I would think the problem is makaraba. If it's a great beating, and then I do like 10 extra, I might think, you know, don't do any more unless you give them a lot extra. How about makamoedisma? How about even just one more? Talmud Lomar, Lo Yosef, don't add. That was the two words before. Then we say, wait a minute, if it says Lo Yosef, don't add, it means one, then why do I have to say Makaraba? Imkein, Ma Tamalomer Makaraba. So he's saying, Limeid Ala Rishonas is teaching us the first lash is the one he's supposed to get, Shehein Makaraba, that they are considered a great beating, not in terms of the numbers of lashing, but in terms of the force with which each is meted out. So don't add on to the Makaraba. In other words, Lo Yosef, don't add even one. And don't add it to that which you already have given him a lot of beating. That's the way he understands this. Okay.
The force of the lashing he's talking
about. That one's wondering it should be a big force. So you're going to add on to the pre-existing makaraba.
So is it saying that the extra force is counted as added? Or is it just
no. They just say don't even make one extra lash to the already significant lashes that were prescribed for him. That's the way they're learning the pasuk.
Like, I know they prescribe a certain amount based on the guy's physical ability, but as they're doing him, do they not look and say, oh, we don't think he can handle any more?
Yeah, well, we talked about that.
Yeah,
we talked about that. Yeah, we mentioned that last week's mission stuff over here. Okay. Yeah. Now, what about, remember the last part, Niskalso, what about the person either couldn't hold himself back, either by excreting or by urinating? Remember, if you recall, the Mishnah said, the Tanakhama said, doesn't matter if in the middle of the lashes he can't hold himself back either way, he's exempt. Man, woman is the same. Rabbi Yehuda made a distinction. A man is exempt only if he soiled himself with excrement, while a woman is exempted even on account of urine. That was what the Mishnah said. So now we're going to analyze this. Tana Rabbanan. Now we have a third opinion. A Brisa brings a third opinion. It says, Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha b'rei. A man and woman are the same. They're exempt once they excrete. Ve'lo b'mayim, and not with urine at all. Oh, that's a new opinion. We didn't have that. Dear Reb Meir, that's Reb Meir. Biura Omer, no. The previous, like we had in the Mishnah. Ha'ish b'rei, a man, if he excretes, that exempts him. But ish even less, but mine, just with urine. V'chamim ramim, like the first opinion of the Mishnah, echad ish, v'echad isha, b'merei, b'mayim. Doesn't matter, a man, a woman, whatever it is, either way out. So you have all three possible opinions are over there. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to bring contradictions between each of the people. So starting with Rabbi Yehuda, who says a man gets excused if he excretes, while a woman, even if she only urinates. V'atanya Aya Brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Echad ish v'echad isha b'rei. They're both the same when it comes to excreting. So it implies that neither one is exempt if soiled only with urine. That contradicts Rabbi Yehuda's statement in the Mishnah that makes a difference between a man and a woman. So how do you deal with that? So Amar Rav Nachman explains Rabbi Yehuda's statement, Shneim Shavim Berei. The second brisa means only that both men and women are equal concerning excrement. Meaning if they both excrete, they're off the hook. But the woman's off the hook even if she only urinates. When it says she's off the hook by urinate, what about excreting? Well, then of course it's like a man. So that's what he means to say.
What does exempt mean?
You don't lash anymore. You stop in the middle. If after the third lash, the guy just can't hold it in, he's done. He's already embarrassed himself enough. That's what he said.
Do they continue it another day?
No, that's it. He's finished.
It.
Remember, it's the whole process is meant to humiliate him. So generally, he's okay, he's supposed to get 39 lashes. That's the humiliation.
That's terrible.
Okay, if the guy's soiling his pants on the seventh lash, that's pretty humiliating. Okay.
One opinion is Rabbanan and one is Chachamim Amru. What's the difference?
That's the same. That's the same. Okay, we'll stop it over here. A little bit more to go. We're going to get the case of what if they want to lash him and he starts running away.
He
runs away. He's Houdini. He breaks through the lash and runs away.
You said, where does he run to, right? See, there's always going to be.